Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of The Cutty Strange on Wavefarm's WGXC 90.7 FM in New York's Upper Hudson Valley. Our guest this month is violinist, singer, composer, and cat fancier Christina Stanley. Tell us about yourself and what you do.
Hello, listeners. I am a musician who is a violinist and a singer, and for the past, past 4 years, been doing a lot of electronic music also. I write songs, and I've done that basically since I was 15, 14. Actually, yeah, even younger than that, but they weren't good. And a composer, kind of. I mean, I have written music for ensembles and notated through composed music to some degree of success, I guess. And what else do? I sing. I'm a trained singer. I enjoy singing. And yeah, I play a variety of different instruments. I play violin well. I play piano and keys. Like to work with synthesizers, and I do that. I enjoy that, and I'm all right. And I play guitar and a little bit of cello. And I liked, in the past, I've painted graphic scores. I like to paint, and I created, four or five pretty decent graphic scores that I thought were really pretty successful in my mind. And I haven't done that for a couple years because I've been focusing more on other things creatively, more electronic music, I suppose. And yeah.
Who are some of your influences growing up or recently?
Musical influences?
Yes.
So growing up, I listened to a lot of pop music. When I was growing up, I listened to whatever my parents were listening to in the car when I was really little. So they listened to a variety of music. They listened to jazz. They listened to classical. They listened to pop music. I was always kind of drawn to the synthesizer sounds, whatever I was listening to. Beverly Hills Cop was like the first, the first album that I ever really loved when I was little, because of all the synth sounds. I really liked that. Later on, when I became, a young adolescent, I became completely obsessed with Depeche Mode for the same reason. And then I kind of got into psychedelic music in high school. Listened to a lot of classical music because I was studying violin at the conservatory in San Francisco in high school. And I also listened to a lot of folk music in high school. I know it's kind of embarrassing, but I listened to Grateful Dead in high school. I liked the Grateful Dead. I liked some punk rock in high school. Joni Mitchell, Neil Young. Those were kind of that was the stuff that inspired my songwriting when I was in high school. And I had so many different musical influences, and so much inspired me. It's hard to pinpoint one, but I did get totally obsessed with Depeche Mode, which is kind of weird. I think I owned like every B-side they made. It's not that cool, but it's true. I mean, I had them all over my car. They were all destroyed. But, I think, looking back on it now that I've got so interested in electronic music, I'm sure that was the reason why I liked it. Dave Gahan also has a great voice, so that doesn't hurt.
When's the last time you listened to a Depeche Mode song?
I don't know. I mean, pretty recent. I guess, you know, maybe less than a week ago. I don't know. I mean, I like listening. I, you know, sometimes I listen to them. It's cool. Whatever. They're good. I actually waited on Dave Gahan once when I was waiting tables in New York and had a fly on my nose when he was talking to me.
Did you know you had a fly on
your nose? I did know I had a... I knew it. And I didn't swat it off because I was so... I was so entranced in that moment that I didn't know what to do. I thought that if I drew attention to the fly on my nose, he'd laugh at me. So I just kind of stood there and talked to him with the fly on my nose. And then he laughed at me anyway.
What got you into experimental and new music?
Well, I always had a very strong creative impulse, and I always wrote music, or, you know, I wanted to write music since I was a little kid. And I kind of did. You know, I had this little diary, and when I was a little girl, I used to write little notes in it and pretend like I was writing music, and wrote songs starting from when I was, like, 8 in my little book. And, I always had that creative impulse. I wanted to make soundtracks when I was a little girl, and so I'd get my friends together, and with the camcorder, we'd make films and things like that, and then I would get on the piano and make the soundtrack. And I started studying violin, and the reason why I started to take it to a high level because I knew it would be a good focus for me, and I knew that if I went into college with a high level of skill on an instrument, that I probably could get a scholarship, and so I did. I got a full scholarship to college on my instrument, and then I studied really hard, and I always felt kind of stifled playing only classical music, and I knew that there was something else out there for me, but I wasn't sure what it was. And, you know, because in my university as an undergrad, the delineation between being a composer and being a performer was extremely strong, and you're either a performer or you're a composer, and if you're a composer, then you're doing it in this very distinct style. And I mean, to a certain extent, you know, there wasn't any improvisation going on, and if there was, it's not, you know, not codified, not part of a curriculum. So I didn't really know that it was something that you could do until the last year I was in. But I always played in bands. The first 3 years of my college experience, I did all the classical music, but then I started to go off and play in bands. And I would always kind of bring an element, a weirdness to whatever band I was in that kind of freaked people out or made weird sounds or, you know, did something that I thought was cool, and then other people would be totally horrified. And, you know, when I started learning about tape music, my last year of college, I started learning about tape music and improvisation, and then I started composing more. I got into this Faust class, this based on, you know, the Faust legend, and be part of the there was a creative project. You just had to incorporate the myth of Faust, and so I wrote a piece for violin, and I it was through composed and everything, but I really enjoyed it, and I remember thinking how satisfying it was to you know, just to have that, just that creative process of writing it and performing it. And then I started going out and finding other musicians and writing for them, and, you know, just playing at art openings and having them play my music. And then after college, I ended up joining a band again. And then after a little while, I found myself in New York, and I ended up quitting the band, and I started recording myself a lot, just for fun, just kind of randomly recording things. And I found myself just recording weird sounds and strange textural stuff with kind of abrasive harmonies, and thinking, and I was so happy doing it that I remember thinking it was weird, that why is this so fun? And I didn't even know that it was something that I could do. You know, I didn't think it was something that even people would like, but I knew that I liked it a lot. And then when I went to Mills, it wasn't even for composition, really. I mean, I just thought, you know, I'll be a teacher because I just wanted to have a job. I thought I could get like a teaching credential to teach in a school. And then I saw that they had the improvisation program and I thought, okay, this seems interesting. You know, I wonder what this is about. And then when I went there, then I really started learning about, you know, electronic music and the history of, you know, Tate Music Center and just all of this amazing music that I didn't know existed. And then I found a good place, you know, a good niche for what I was doing creatively. And I, you know, the scene, the there's so many amazing people here that, you know, that actually enjoy experimental music and like listening to it. I'm kind of shocked, actually, when I play out or if I play my music somewhere, that people actually like it is weird to me. Because, I mean, to me, it's just so, you know, bizarre sometimes. But I mean, that's what I want to do. It's a lot of what I want to do is weird. So.
Thank you.
What about your electronic music?
So should I talk about the pieces that I did? Well, just, you know, so my electronic music is almost completely generated in Max MSP, which is a program created by Cycling 74, which is a San Francisco-based company that we all love, and a lot of our friends. Yeah, well, I love Cycling 74. I love it, and I love Max MSP, and I think it's an amazing program, and I love it. Anyway, yeah, and for it's, I like that I can create basically whatever I want without having. It's cool. It's like no matter what you want to do, there's a way to build something to make your whatever sound you want to happen, and there's a lot of surprises that can happen. I love synths, but I don't have the money to go out and buy a lot of hardware, so I like working with Max because you know, it's software, and you can, you know, get a lot of the same results that you would get, or same types of sounds that you would get using analog synths, just using digital patcher. You can interface with, you know, live process vocals, live process strings, live process, but then also have those live acoustic or analog signals trigger other pre-recorded or manipulated sound sources from within the patch, and it's fun. So that's what I use. Sometimes, you know, when I first started making electronic music, it was pretty wacky and just kind of, you know, just having fun with it and entertaining myself, which I like to do a lot. And then, you know, now I've been working with Max enough that I kind of have a type of a sound that I like to create with it, which is really texture heavy. Usually I'll use sound sources like, you know, I'll use the inside of the piano, I'll use wood, I'll use like a hairdryer, a lot of white noise, pink noise, string sources, like I'll play cello, I'll play violin, I'll use vocals and slow them down so you can't, you know, you don't recognize it as being a vocal. That's the other thing that I love about the program is that you can take basically any sound. I mean, you can do this. That's why I love electronic music, is you can take like any sound source and kind of make it sound like anything you want it to, or you don't have to have it be pure. And then, like, lately I've been using like live processing vocals. I built a little phaser in Max, and that's what I did for the San Francisco Electronic Music Festival. And I wrote out a lot of lyrics that is kind of a story or a transformative story about dying and going to purgatory and coming back, and it was based on a few different texts, and one of them is the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which I, you know, loaned to Nick Wang, but it's pretty horrifying book.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm like quite in the right state of mind.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. Which is why I was inspired by it. It's good for conjuring sound imagery, you know, like it's pretty bad. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I don't want to say it's bad, but you know, if you haven't read it, pick up a copy. Yeah, and then different poems, you know. Yeah, and I build beats using presets and like white noise, pink noise, with, you know, sometimes I'll use my sound sources and kind of have bursts of sound like in the beats. And then, you know, I'll use a metronome or do different things to slow it down or that kind of thing. I don't really use, I have Logic and sometimes I use Logic, but I don't really use it sometimes I use it to change the sound source before I put it into Max, but usually I just use Max.
Do you find that you have like a different mindset or state of mind when you're working with electronics as opposed to, say, acoustic music or improvising? Or?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think yeah, I mean, I think when I'm improvising, that you don't have the time to really think that much. I mean, it's just, you don't really have time to think at all. So, yeah, in that sense, it's totally different. You know, when I'm improvising, I just kind of play. And then when I'm creating electronic music, I really think a lot. I mean, not think. Think is the wrong word. I listen a lot. And I really work on making each... I spend a lot of time on making each, like, sample, mm-hmm. even, like, a certain way, and then before I even put it in, and then you can't even tell that I did it at the end. You know, you can't even tell that I changed it. I put a lot of effort and a lot of care into what I do with electronic music. Even though, I mean, I don't really... I'm not an engineer or an acoustician or anything like that, but I really enjoy it, and I like the process a lot. So I spend a lot of time and a lot of detail in it. It's kind of the same way that I was with the paintings. You know, I like to work on details, and so I'll spend a lot of time in the detail. Whereas with improvising, it's just really raw, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, you just get up there and just kind of play. So I'm sure that to the listener, there's probably, I mean, you go back and listen to something I do with electronic music and something I do with improvising, and there's similarities, I think, in the types of sounds that are created and the type of overall impression, but the way that I get there is totally different, you know.
So I'd say it's like different ways of accessing like a similar sonic vocabulary.
I think so, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Although, you know, it depends on how I'm improvising. If I'm just doing like a solo improvisation, it's more similar to the electronic music that I make. But if I'm improvising with other people, then there's going to be a different type of a sound. Usually there's like a lot of the same language is there, but it's, you know, there's going to be a lot more sensitivity and quiet, you know. I mean, in my electronic stuff, there really isn't a ton of silence. There's definitely like narrative and there's structure, but there's not like, you know, big moments of silence like there would be with you know, like some, when you're improvising with three or four people. I like having silence, or having, you know, space in those environments, because then it gives you time to kind of take it in and not just play it over everybody else, you know? So, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Tell us about your graphic scores.
So, and the last one I made was last year. And it was a map of Osaka that I made, that with a map of Brussels and a map of London. And I kind of, I put them together in a big painting, and in, they were all, I enjoyed that. I mean, it was based on, I didn't project it and then draw it, but I spent a lot of time making it kind of to scale, and, you know, all the city blocks and the rivers, and then I painted it, and then the gradations of the color informed the, like, the texture of the player, you know, how the player would go in and out. Basically, the process is I create the form first with the graphic scores. Usually I create the form first based on, like, very solid, strong, geometric shapes. And then I go and make rules based on the shape, so, or based on the image. And so the image kind of informs the rules for the players. And what I like about the system is that it kind of allows the player to have their own structure depending on how they want to interpret the score, but within, like, a strong framework, so that things don't get out of hand, and then there's a cohesive, unifying kind of sonic tie. Does that make sense? So the rules inform, like, the type of sonic material that's going to occur, but the player can dictate, you know, generally the pitch material within a certain range that usually is predetermined by the rules. And they can they can go through the score however they like, but when, in whatever order they like, but there's certain structural elements within the score that stay the same. So it's like a choose your own adventure story in a graphic score. I always liked those choose your own adventure stories when I was little. That guy just died too this year.
Who? Which guy?
The guy that wrote all the choose your own adventure stories. You guys ever read those stories when you were little?
I've read some of them, but
they're so cool.
I've read them by, like, different dudes.
Yeah.
No, there's one main guy. Really? I'll look him up. Yeah. Anyway, that's kind of what I really love those, and I think that influenced my my graphic scores. But I had a performance of that one. I mean, I've made probably five ones that I like. The one that I was just talking about, I had performed by a bunch of musicians in LA last year at an art gallery, or I had an opening of my scores, which was great. Temple Ad Hoc, my friend Alana Hill, put together like a floating gallery called Temple Ad Hoc, and then a bunch of people from, like, CalArts graduates came out and they volunteered to play my music, which was pretty amazing.
Why Osaka?
Well, I just really liked the map. I found a really old map, and I liked that it was a port town, and it was a really old port town. It kind of reminded, you know, it's like San Francisco. I liked that it was surrounded by water. And Japan, you know, what happened with Fukushima really influenced my psyche that year. And I think that I was just drawn to Japanese maps and culture at that time, but I didn't want to, you know, use Fukushima, you know. It's
a little too political.
I don't know. I mean, it just didn't, yeah. And also just the map. It was more just like, I liked the way the city looked, and I liked that it was a port town, and I liked the history of it. So that's why. And then I also Brussels, same reason. I really loved the layout of the city and the way it looked, because it's kind of radial, you know, like a, looks like a star. And then in London, that, I don't know why I used London.
Is your name Waspy?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it was Moby. That was all Moby. Yeah. There was a reason, I'm sure.
See things for what they are, not what you like. You'd like them to be, they'll be what they may. Is there some kind of life that got away from the eyes of those who maintain the visions of you from up in the sky? It was such a pretty thing, flying above the moon. The moon was so still, hanging around to make sure that it
about your experience with Moby in New York City.
Moby. I'm sure he's not listening to this. Maybe he is somewhere. I actually had a really pleasant interaction with Moby that night. I was at a club or something in the Lower East Side, and I can't remember who I was with. I think it was with a couple people that I worked with at the restaurant, and Moby came up to me and sat down next to me, and he said, "Hello, I'm Moby." And I said, "Yeah, I know." And then I didn't know his name was actually Moby. Like, I thought maybe he had a different name. But later on in the evening, I found out that the reason why his name is Moby, his stage name is Moby, is because his grandfather is Herman Melville. Yeah. And he's from the Upper East Side and has quite a bit of pedigree, and he actually told me that I had a waspy name, which I didn't understand what that meant at the time. Actually, it was kind of naive. But yeah, he said to me, "You're the most interesting woman I've ever met," and I was very flattered. And he said, "Come back to my house with your friends." So we did, You know, he had this huge house. It was like four stories, and he had a shower on the roof, and this giant studio with bathed in blue light. And, you know, he started playing acoustic guitar up on the roof and trying to feel on my waist and stuff. And I just, I was creeped out. And then I left, and he wasn't super happy about it. And then he started sending me emails and questionnaires in these emails. And then he asked me to join his band later. But we weren't, like, friends, you know? But he asked me to join his band, and I couldn't. Like, when he sent me the links to the music, I couldn't bring myself to do it because the music just wasn't good, in my opinion. I think Moby is cool. I like, you know, I respect Moby's artistry. His band just wasn't good. It was boring. And so I didn't do it. And now, I mean, I kind of regret not taking that opportunity. Well, I don't know. Did his band ever do anything good? I mean,
no.
No.
The Cuddy Strange is produced by Daniel Steffi and Nick Wang and broadcast on Wave Farms 90.7 FM in New York's Upper Hudson Valley. Our guest this month was violinist, singer, electronic musician, and cat fancier Christina Stanley.